Welcome to the worlds of WordCraft. Welcome to the worlds of WordCraft. Welcome to the worlds of WordCraft.
Welcome to the worlds of WordCraft. English 115F, Fall 2007, Vanderbilt University. Professor Jay Clayton, Professor Matthew Jed Hall. Visit our class blog at worldsofwordcraft.wordpress.com.
Okay, well, let's go to lunch early and be here at 1 o'clock.
1 o'clock. That's the best we can do, guys. So we'll be here at 1. It's actually better that we don't have everybody in at the same time, because what you'll want to do is have a little bit of time in the tool set, bring whatever questions you have about the tool set. We'll have a chance to review the documentation, questions on how things work, how the event programming model works, how the conversations work. We're going to talk about Edmund Spencer's role in this today, and we'll probably walk through constructing some base conversations so you know what that looks like. But 1 o'clock, Jay, then?
1 o'clock.
Okay, so we'll start up here in this room at 1 o'clock. And we'll just go, in all seriousness, Greg, we'll just go until everybody's done. But around 4:30 is where I think I like to break, because I got to be down out of the county for the weekend, starting that evening. Okay, we have a lot to cover. I've signed a reading, Rules of Play, Game Design Fundamental. This is Games as Narrative Play. Who did not get a chance to read that?
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie.
So we've got half the class who did not read that. Oh. That is available on eReserves, which is on Oak. Okay. What we want to discuss today is, let's just kind of recap so we remember the order in which we're conducting the course. We've held our discussions around being good consumers, remediation, had our discussions around the content in Fairy Queen. This is the actual game design and game mechanics implementations movement of the course. There's a lot of different types of games. Games as simulation, right? There's games as experience. We're talking about the context of narrative play. And just to recap, we want to go back and revisit some of the concepts that we've already visited. We're going to do this very quickly because I want to be able to get us into the discussion around Edmund Spencer's role here within the context of our game. I'm going to show you the modifications I've made as a result of this, what Professor Clayton has on the screen of the smart board right now. This design elements that you put together, I've integrated the basics in the game, and I want to show you what the jousting plane looks like right now. So right now we've got the jousting plane, we've got the conference room set up, and we've got Edmund Spencer's study set up, and all of those are hooked together within the context of the Neverwinter Nights module already. So that's there. That's available online in our class supplemental materials. You can download it and look at it and walk around it and play with it right now. Excuse me. Talk about this for a minute. The whole, and I suspected that we might have low readership here, but I've taken the liberty to kind of summarize and excerpt key components of the reading. We've established at this point, I think, that games are narrative. The question is, how is that narrative expressed? And remember, the way we did this is back from a book we should remember. Remember Jesper Juul's Half Real. The whole fundamental argument in this book is that games are both a set of rules and fiction. And I want to talk a little bit about the narrative aspects of that, but I think one of the most important concepts here is that enjoyment is really going to depend upon someone's ability to overcome challenges in a consistent, rule-based way. So that challenge component, that what I wanted to ask you, Professor Clayton, could you give us a re-summary of the quest hero cycle briefly that we went through with the Lord of the Rings, the emergence from the underworld, the circular chart?
Sure, sure. Yeah, I think most of you all were pretty familiar with this back when we went over it the first time, but the quest cycle generally begins with your character having some kind of destabilizing event in his or her life, you know, and I think you all were the ones that provided the Star Wars example of you know, the farm being torched by the stormtroopers. Perfect example of it. The hero sets out on a quest, generally has to cross a threshold very early, which commits the character to the quest. While on the quest, encounters obstacles that serve as initiation, leading to generally a journey down into the underworld, a kind of nadir of the quest, a moment when your hero has to face something of the dark side, the other side of what the quest involves. And then the kind of rising action after that often involves a second threshold that involves much more of a recognition about what the meaning of that threshold is, so that instead of dedicating yourself to the quest just kind of a, sure, let's go, the second time around you have more understanding of what this is going to mean for you and for your future, and you make that decision much more self-consciously than you did before. And then the end of the quest, and I'm not sure we emphasized this strongly when we first went over it, but the end of the quest is often a return to where you set out from, but on a different level. You know, you've come back, but with a new kind of understanding born of the experiences that you've had.
Did we not use Gandalf as that example?
Gandalf's a great
transformation.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, and the symbolism of Gandalf suddenly wearing white is very profound of about the transformation that he's undergone.
And guys, what happened to Gandalf? That was the threshold of that transformation. What was the moment that he became
fought the Balrog? Yeah, he killed it and then realized he wanted to be good, great, to maintain the balance.
I think it was a pivotal moment, and it goes down to it's the Nadir, right? He fell into the depths in the most literal sense while he was battling that Balrog. And that's what the thing, you know, emerged as a transformed individual. But in large aspect, I think, as Professor Clayton points out, he was still the same Gandalf, returning to a different state. So, narrative, there's a couple, there's probably 800 definitions. I have a dictionary of literary terms. I've got on our library site, we have the Oxford English Dictionary of Literary Terms. I just went to the OED quickly and I said, what is a narrative? We talk about narrative, we hear people talking about narrative. We talk about narrative. It's used in common practice. And there is narratologists. There is narratology. There are people who just study this for a living and have tremendous scholarship around it. The thing that I'd like to ask you guys to consider while you're in the process of putting these design elements together, if a narrative is what it says here, an account of a series of events given in order with establishing connections between them, given in order, a series of events, does that imply that this is linear? That narrative, to be narrative, has to be linear? This goes to Peter's discussion about maintaining Malacasta's static nature from place to place to place within the context of a game space.
I mean, by this definition, isn't Lothar not really a narrative? Because you can kind of pick the order you do the question.
Well, let's discuss that for a few. I'm going to discuss this concept for a few minutes because it's very important to the next brief part of our conversation. Is it?
I think this is kind of a tight definition of narrative.
I think it's too tight?
Yeah.
I think literature is a narrative. I mean, it has a narrative. It allows us to experience a narrative.
Well, and there's two things mentioned in the article, two types of narrative that I want to key in on. There's the embedded and the emergent narratives, which we want to talk about. So, and I think this is to your point. The emergent narrative comes from your actual gameplay. That's the narrative and story that emerges from the choices you make within the space. But isn't there an embedded narrative, Tim, within Lotro? Is there not a context and a storyline happening that's embedded that the authors of that space have placed in there? What would that be? What's the embedded narrative running through Lotro?
The epic quest.
The epic quest. Is there not an overarching set of events happening around you, something which you are...
I don't know what Sauron is, so...
There's a war going on, right? And Sauron's a bad guy, and then the free peoples of Middle-earth are trying to stop the assault. That's kind of the narrative, embedded narrative, and those quests, as you point out, Daniel, are very much a part of that. But I want you to consider, you know, still think about it, is that... And it's kind of hard to put in a game space, because in Tolkien, that gets resolved... you start on page one and you end up on page, you know, one plus whatever, how many pages are in the books. And then it gets resolved from left to right over a period of time. How does that differ in a game space? What do you think, Seth?
You somewhat make the choices, even though in the end it's all the same, I think. Put that touch in there.
Within LOTRO, is there anything that we do that influences the state of affairs?
No.
What about the auction house?
That's not
100%. Well, let's go. Is the auction house a form of narrative?
Of narrative?
Yeah.
Well, it's so much as you can buy items there. You need to gain levels in your crafting thing. Eventually, you become a better crafter. That can help with the narrative because that leads to new choices or new quests.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Wesley, you were saying something.
Oh, every transaction is an event. It's a bet, and they're all connected. And I was thinking within LOTRO as well. Every action you do, whether or not it's embedded, is still within that definition because when they're connected by you doing them. And I think that you know any chain of action within a game can be a narrative.
Going to our reading, that second highlighted phrase that I have there, to the point about the auction house and leveling up. Level or mission-based structures in games also provide important narrative goals. Completing a level means not only achieving an objective, remember objective is one of the things we discussed, but also passing through one episode of a larger story. Now, that's the quest basis, but I would argue that these enjoying the mechanics of the game, right, is also story elements. Michael and I just had a conversation about me lending him money to go to the auction house to do market fixing. Did we not just create, and many of you were in here for this, Michael, tell them what we were about with the auction house, how that may have been a part of our story and shared experience.
Well, we want. I've noticed that some things in the auction house were selling for less than others, so I decided to fix that and just make the extra money. You know, they were selling for $700, and I could sell them for about $1,200. So I didn't have enough money to buy it, so I asked Matt to help me with that, lend me the extra money to buy it. And
I agree. So, I mean, potentially, read that highlight. Someone read that highlighted thing for me right there.
Narrative can also be emergent, which means that it arises from the set of rules governing interaction with the game system.
So an emergent narrative is something that Dado and Carradine just engaged in. Thank you, Mr. Shelton, for that lovely read. It can be emergent. You have a set of game system rules in there that you're going to experience together. What it says here is that the story, the narrative aspects, arise from us interacting with that game system. Do you have something?
Yeah, I kind of wanted somebody to define emergent format for us. Yeah, Greg, you on? You look so intelligent. I thought maybe.
Emergence is when the players bind together and use their own like thought processes and like stuff that the game developer never really intended for the game
right.
to do.
Right.
And just like create their own gameplay.
Right. So if you read the book, if you read the chapter for today, the authors related emergent to the notion of complex systems. Who picked up on that? Anyone understand what they meant by complex systems and emergent behavior? So it was just a complete puzzle to you. It's a tough idea. Complex systems, there's a burgeoning science these days called the science of emergence or the science of complexity that argues that new forms of behavior can be emergent from interactions in complex systems that are fundamentally unpredictable. That is, ahead of time, no one could have analyzed and predicted what kind of behavior would emerge from a complex system so that airplane designers want to work with issues such as turbulence to understand what the lift on a wing will be and they discover that they can't predict where the no amount of physics and mathematics can predict where the molecules of air will actually go, but they can predict on a larger scale, a macro scale, that certain emergent behaviors will occur, that is, lift. And so the authors here are relying on that notion of emergence behavior to say that new kinds of narrative unpredicted by the game makers can emerge from the interaction of complex systems that include you as you and everyone else in the system.
And I think it's different than this idea of collaborative narrative, which you also see right in the article.
Bingo.
Very different.
Or it's different even from interactive narrative. That's one of the things that's distinctive about this reading, is that interactive narrative is still a version of what they're calling embedded narrative. If the interactions, if the two choices are linear, you know, they've increased your freedom, but it's still inside a framework. Whereas emergent behavior can be completely, well, not completely independent of the framework, but somewhat.
The idea is there's a system here, and there's a set of rules. Michael and I know the set of rules of the auction house. We spent the whole time before class talking that the auction house charges you a certain posting fee to get in. You lose that regardless. It has a system that when I sell the house, I guess, the Lotro house, takes a piece of the action of what we sold. Right? And then, now your idea behind this is that if there's people who have priced themselves too low for a particular, what was the product you were looking at doing? So,
Pristine Hides.
Pristine Hides. If people are pricing them too low, he will go in to the auction house. This is the set of rules governing the interaction with the game system. That's the system that we're dealing with, the auction house within the game. He'll go in, another player positions something, and then he'll buy it. I'll give him some gold, and then he'll buy up as much as he can and then resell it at a price that he wants to sell it. Is that constitute, Greg, do you think that constitutes a narrative, emergent narrative?
Yeah, in a way.
Anyone, Seth?
I think you can, with such large-scale games, you can track the economy. It's like a small city. You can see booms and inflations for that, and like, you know, when houses came out, I bet bushes, whatever. But, you know, just certain things become more popular, and you can just track demand with that. And you can be in some economy class, and then you can tell a story with that.
So, and this is the important design component. You do not necessarily design for emergent narrative, but you make sure that you have some degree of systemic capability that when people interacted with it, they'll come up with some sort of unintended consequences. That was not the consequence of the auction houses to provide a price-fixing arrangement between me and Michael. That was... go ahead.
So, didn't mean to interrupt.
No, please go.
Sometimes emergent narratives can become sort of embedded narratives in later versions of games, can't they?
Absolutely.
Developers will notice emergent narratives that are taking place frequently in sort of, like, I think earlier in the year we were talking about how in a previous game a lot of people like to just spend their whole time farming or doing a specific, I don't know, activity in the game, and then so they'd elaborate and do more farming quests or more farming activities in the later version.
I agree with that. That can definitely, because they learn more about the player's behavior within the game space from the emergent narrative, but then they'll embed it into the storyline. I think the biggest embedded narrative around the crafting space was, for example, your quest to get a... what's the hog you got to go kill?
There's a boar
you've got to go kill. It's to carry on the crafting, you need to go achieve that quest. You got to go up to Weathertop, and I think that's going to be more and more extensible to other professions as they design the crafting systems. Any other comment on emergent narrative?
I think a huge platform for emergent narrative is PvP, especially because it's so spontaneous. It's also a huge part of the game culture, and
I talk
about it in my blog, and that how much, I mean, even start part of the economy revolves around PvP, such as, you know, gear that's perfect for PvP, and that's one of my favorite parts of, you know, that narrative, that I've had so many epic battles, you know, in PvP.
And you talk about them as if they were real events and stories and things that happen.
People record them and post them on YouTube, and they go as far. Me and my friends are planning a video, and it's going to be. I just think that's a huge part of a good example of emergence.
I want to follow up on your point about them posting it on YouTube and. So that emergent narratives actually enter the kind of intertextual field that we talked mm-hmm. about early in the semester and become spill beyond the boundaries of the narrative as planned. The emergent narrative, the intertextual situation set up by that kind of ancillary postings and materials creates ultimately a kind of universe of narrative or a penumbra of narrative that is beyond the finite borders of the book, of the movie, or even of the game that makes all of that possible.
So back to my initial question. I mean, I want these abstractions to inform your design thinking over the next week. When we start a game, there is a beginning state. Right? What's the beginning state of... What was your beginning state of Lotro? What was the setup for Lotro? It was all not too dissimilar. I think everybody had to go through a particular area. What was the setup of Lotro?
Follow some person around.
Say what, Chris?
You were like following some person around in an instance, and they were like, come on, grab this weapon, click to attack, do this, you can cast spells, and... killed this many goblins. Okay, now talk to so-and-so.
It's a fairly structured beginning state. But there was an opening state in which you found yourself. And during the course, the second part up here, during the course of your gameplay, there was some sort of change that occurred. One of the most obvious changes are what? Think about the changes that occurred in your experience of Lord of the Rings Online. No matter your 5th level or 50th level, you should be able to detect some basic changes that occurred in your character and your experience. You interacted with the rule set in the world through playing the game. What changed about you or that avatar you played?
Level.
Basically, power. Basic. You leveled up.
The different choices that you unlock, like crafting wasn't there at the beginning. You're just kind of running around killing things, and then crafting is a whole different animal.
So you added an additional skill set to your character. Okay, but those are character development changes. What else changed?
You have freedom changes too, because you can go to a lot more places and you have more choices on where you want to go to quest.
Okay, so keep going with the exploration.
Environmental
changes. Did you opened up other areas in world exploration, right? As your capabilities increased, you were able to explore more of that world and have that freedom of movement. So your understanding of the geography changed. You had a better understanding of the history. Anything else change about you? What changed in your mind? Anything? Other than some satisfaction of working with the rule set?
When did we feel satisfaction?
Could be.
Not.
Did you put them when you? I was online with you. Matter of fact, I lent you money to get a horse. He paid me back like the next day, But he got his horse. Did you have a sense of satisfaction? I remember you spawned a whole blog entry talking about intertextuality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just like a status quo. Also DPS. You know, the more damage you do, the better you feel about
He's
yourself.
He's a DPS fan.
Well, it's just like the more powerful you are.
Right. Well, you know, there was a series of accomplishments. So what I want to get to is think about the state changes that you went through, but then you also there were moments of accomplishments and satisfaction you have. Matt derived one from getting that horse, increasing DPS. There's an internal change, you know, before and after. Some change occurred in your knowledge and understanding of the Lotro space or, your character, which given you hopefully satisfaction and enjoyment. And there was a lot of discussion in this Rules of Play chapter about role-playing games. What's the resulting insight? In a game of checkers, what's the outcome?
Winner, loser.
Right? Now, we had a kind of long conversation around Dungeons & Dragons as that regard in RPGs. Is there, in the Dungeons & Dragons model of gaming, in a role-playing game, is there a particular end game?
No.
I mean, there's like the in character and out of character. I don't know, some people really like to not get out of character, and they talk as if they are their characters, and the Dungeon Master is like the only one that actually is sort of a third person thing. And then, I don't know, the way we do it is, it's sort of like a collaborative novel almost. Instead of one person writing, this person says this, you're like, well, my guy tells him, and then you could say, you know, sort of almost a summary of what he's saying, and then it's just sort of a everything's there.
There's potentially, in the RPG space, there's potentially another adventure. There's not a, like, checkers is a finite outcome, right? You know that there's a winner. Is there a winner and loser in Lord of the Rings Online? Wesley, is there a winner and loser in World of Warcraft?
Well, there's in-game. There are in-game instances and raids that you can do. But you can always do more. There's always more.
But you can always do the in-game again, right?
Yeah.
So this is there is a discussion in this chapter about replay, about playing the same games and experiencing it in a different way, or through different characters, right? So think about all these insights. The theory behind the narrative experience discussion that you'll have to let inform your design in our subsequent discussions here in a few minutes, there is a beginning state. Something changes during the course of people interacting with your world. And there should be, even if it's an intellectual or learning moment, there should be some resulting insight. Now, remember some things we agreed to, and let's see if I can get to it here real quick. We agreed with, remember the 30 seconds of play discussion that we, 30 seconds of fun, right?
Mm-hmm.
We came up with some, I think Tim was pointing out, we didn't have a way to encapsulate it in one big marketing phrase, but we said we wanted to explore the narrative of the Fairy Queen. I'm just about two-thirds of the way down the page where I'm reading the blog entry where I try to summarize this. The principles are, we're going to explore the narrative of the Fairy Queen. We're going to enjoy the Spencerian world context. That's our fairyland design. We're going to explore chastity. We're going to explore this theme. So if you're going to explore chastity, think about those three things we just mentioned. There is a beginning state. Your audience member is going to come into this world, and you don't know what their level of understanding or conception about chastity is. But if there is to be a beginning state and an outcome through interaction with our space, what is it? And Greg, aren't you the one who brought the chastity one up? So you can lead the discussion on what should the change be from when we started, when someone approaches your game world, to when, what would be the outcome or the change mechanics to the resulting insight?
Well, they should, I don't know if they have to agree with, I mean, you know, we, you know, there's actually not even a level of agreeing with Spencer's view of chastity, but
yeah.
some form of elaboration? Do we want it to be purely mechanical? The death part, I still pretty strongly about it. When you die, the game mechanic sends you back to this space. Number one. Go ahead, Peter.
I think he'd give you, like, he comes up and talks to you when you appear, and he gives you the mutability speech, sort of, that you have to go through saying, you know, you died, sort of thing. But I think, you know, whenever you talk to people, you can always sort of delve into them, or you can be like, screw you, I'm leaving.
Right.
And so I think you, instead of having, you know, having to read his books or whatever, maybe you could have a few of them, but I think to learn about Edmund Spenser, if you really wanted to, you could just elaborate in conversation with him, and you could just have so many different branches. You know, you could ask him, who are you? He's like, I'm Edmund Spenser. And then you could just have, you know, any sort
tell
of question
more,
yeah, that you needed to ask. And if you didn't want to do that, you could be like, I'm leaving, bye. And you just go back into Fairyland.
Well, let me show you a couple things here. I did what Peter's talking about. This is me. And Professor Clayton, I don't know if you're going to take up the challenge of designing your own avatar in conversation.
Absolutely.
Professor Clayton is going to design his representation of the world. And by the way, anybody who wants in here and wants to design themselves with a dialogue associated with it, knock yourself out. I promise you there will be no editorial.
Can I be a Balrog?
You can do whatever you want. That shows your inner
press. He can promise. I'm not sure.
So let me, to don't lose Peter's point here. Check out when this Matt Hall conversation. Drive over here. Welcome to the Fairy Queen Online. God, that guy's handsome. Okay.
He's so old.
He's a young feller. Glad to be here. So FQO started as a final class project for English, et cetera, et cetera. That's lovely. So here's what I did to Peter's point. Where can I can learn more would be conversation branch one. What is to Peter's second point? That's fascinating, but all I really did is play it. So I think that's the kiss my booty sort of statement. And so you can go through that branch.
You could even have a
your eyes are really
lose chastity points. That is just so rude.
You think you'd lose chastity points if you smart off to me? So are you going somewhere in particular?
I don't need to.
You can just put like little captions on each door saying, you know, get into action now. On the Fairy Queen door, learn a little bit of background on the Edmund Spenser door. So if someone wants to play right away, they can just look at the captions on the door.
Okay, now here's sort of the thing I want you to be aware of. You're going to have a conversation. You'll have an NPC or an object. I'll move out of the way so that you can hear from behind my back and see this. You have an NPC. An NPC can have an associated conversation. All right, so you're going to have a non-player character or an object with conversation. Right? Conversations are very simple in the way in which they unfold. You saw that branch with Matt. Let me show you here again, and then I will actually show you in the editor before we get out of class. That's the first note of a conversation. So your NPC says, in this case, welcome. Right? And then it's sequential. It's a waterfall. It flows from top to bottom. So I've given an option. There's only one option in this case. Lovely, thank you for... glad to be here. That is your response. So I'm going to try to do this in a more thoughtful way. I'll put black as the NPC statement, and we'll use red as the player response. In this case, it's thanks, right? That's the option you've got. One option, thanks, glad to be here. So then we've got another response. Now, from this response, it goes down to here. Some FQO, et cetera. So FQO, right? That's, so you see now, here's the next one. There's a branch. So it's fascinating, FQO started and so forth. Now you're given a choice. You as a player are now able to respond on two different paths. See this branch? I'm not going to go into details. A and B. A and B, one and two. That's the hierarchy of how that conversation works. So now, let me tell you one more thing that's, I think, important from our discussion of exploring the theme of chastity. When you're interacting with a person in this environment, if you respond to A or B, I can programmatically increase your chastity faction or decrease your chastity faction based upon the text of your response. That would be how we deal with the game mechanics. So... whatever option A is, I can give you gold, I can give you experience, I can give you chastity points, or I can decrease it. Or I could kill you if you get the wrong response. Anything you can dream up of, we can do.
Wow.
right? You turn, we can turn you into a
fool.
Turn.
Do not mock Edmund Spencer. I think I'm just going to kill everyone.
What I'm trying to teach you guys is something very important here that I want you to walk away with. It's just a branching conversation. You do not need to go in the editor to start fleshing out your conversations. Think about how those branches are, what choices are, and then think about what consequences or benefits or rewards do you want your player to experience in the context of that conversation. And by the way, here's one thing I want you to think about. You can ask questions. Not all of these things have to be revealed. For example, I could have a third, this item green, I could have a third branch that will only be revealed if you are in possession of the locket of chastity. A strand of hair from Malacasta may be traded for some evil potion. All right, there's a lot of if-then. If you possess item X, if you are of chastity level Y, certain outcomes are able to be achieved within the context of the game. You guys tracking with me on this? Who doesn't understand why I'm going through this? Because it's moving you right towards building your own dialogue for your characters. This is the way you design your dialogue. All right? Questions on that? So this is how that plays out. I've got two. I'm going to get my keyboards right. I'm starting to confuse myself. Yeah, here's a class blog. Brilliant. Now.
Smart board.
Yes, we always make the smart board there. Smart board's in our class, so.
Shut up.
It's not very nice. Don't insult yourself.
Yeah, that guy's brilliant in the morning. Okay.
It's probably because you're not able to understand his high level intelligence.
It's hard. Well, you know, I don't know if I put my chair in here. Wait a second. You guys see my chair? I still had it. I don't know if Jim made me take it out tonight. No, it used to be the throne of genius, but I think let me take that down.
Man, you were just such a spoiled sport.
This is a jousting plane, and guess what? This is what the jousting plane looks like. You know why the jousting plane looks like this?
Because it's a plane.
That's right, guys. You haven't made it yet. I just put that lady there has nothing to do with the story. It's just a test. I want to make sure something's working. One of the things that inside the system that I've set up is called a spawn timer system. You guys are, who's not familiar with spawns in the MMO space? Raise your hand. Daniel's not familiar with spawn. Tim's never familiar with spawn. Chris, can you explain a spawn to everybody? What's a spawn, you know?
It's just like people pop up out of nowhere. Well, maybe not out of nowhere, but yeah, they just pop up. There's like usually a trigger for it, like you enter an area or you say something. Or
there's
like
a timer
that they die. They die, they'll come back.
Okay, so when you go in and you kill wolves out of an area, guys, listen up. When you go out and kill wolves in an area, the wolves get depleted. Do the wolves not come back?
Oh, they do.
They spawn.
Yeah, they're back. You gotta kill them again.
They're usually on a timer. I've built a system programmatically in here, and we place waypoints. We can put a creature down. You can kill it, and then we can control. So if you have an item that you want on the jousting plane that says, we want this herd of buffalo here, whatever, I don't know what it is, whatever you want to place out there, after someone kills it, I want 20 minutes before it respawns.
That's a little time.
Or 3 minutes before it respawns. But the spawn timer, is going to change the narrative experience of your game. Because if you have someone that's constantly having buffaloes respawn on them, or spiders respawn on them, they can get stuck in there a long time trying to get to the next geographical area. So make sure it's purposeful why you put creatures there. I built a set of commoners that have a set of 10 random dialogues just for general ambiance that you go in, you talk to them, they'll say different things to you, and their clothes are randomized when they put on clothes. So that's just... So from general color, but that's the extent to which I'm going to do anything here other than take your design ideas and implement them here. So I wanted to show you that the jousting plane is not there. We have to make decisions together on the geography of it, what it's going to look like, what's going to happen, how we're going to explore the theme of chastity on the jousting plane, how we move to the next area. There are transitions from area to area. You saw a transition from a conference room out to that plane.
Can you not go back?
Not yet.
I could. I just haven't stitched it in yet.
You can kill yourself.
I think she might beat us up, but I'm not sure. So. But my real message here is this is the blank slate. This is how it generally looks when you start the game development cycle, guys. Now, the next thing is what we're largely going to lead with. It's going to be on you. We're at 8 minutes before. Go ahead.
Is there a cycle for the sun? You already done that?
Yeah,
we noticed the shadows. I'm sure.
There is a cycle for the sun. As a matter of fact, we can constrain an area to be all day or all night if you want to. You can change the color, so it doesn't have to be the radiant glow of the sun. It could be black as, you know, pitch, or it can be yellow or red or purple, however you want to show that. Let me show you quickly how this looks in the tool set. It's going to be a little bit harder to see. Quick thing on the areas, these are the tabs. These are the places where you can flip from area to area. This item here is the area page, conversation page. Remember this conversation, Combat Hall? I want you to start all your conversations with CON underscore. CON underscore. This is what that conversation looked like. Welcome to the Fairy Queen. Thank you. Glad to be here. Remember this? This is what it's going to look like inside the tool set. Scripts. I want to show you the complex nature of some of the scripts. When you die, this is a death script that I've written. Okay? You see this?
We don't have to write that.
You do not have to write that. I did all the heavy lifting, like I said. Well, he doesn't have to write that. But I want you to say that you know, these things are fairly complex. There's these two respawns. I wrote both these.
You know this?
Yeah.
What's C++?
It's just C programming for anybody who's interested in learning more about it.
Okay, just C++.
It's not C++, it's just C. So there's a difference. So understand that these scripts are going to be... Go ahead, Jay.
Would you go back to the conversation?
Yes, sir, right here.
Okay, where do you write con?
When you save it. When you save it, right.
So here, it's the file name.
Right.
It's
and then
con dash.
As in any Windows conventional interface, you can right-click on something. Like, you notice I right-clicked on the con. If it comes back with a default name, right-click on it and rename.
And rename in ways that you will be able to remember next time you try to work with that.
Yes.
So put a descriptive name in there with no spaces, I presume?
That's correct.
It's very important when you think you'll remember something like that, and also particularly if other people are going to be working with and revising and editing things you've created, you want a descriptive title for every single file that you make in this game.
Okay, that's the conversation. You've seen the scripts. We're not going to do any of the campaign stuff. So these are your areas. The thing I want to point out about the area... For example, every area has, and this is to Tim's question earlier, use day and night fog color. Each element inside of Neverwinter Nights has a properties page, things that are descriptive about it. So I want to show you some of those. Each area has an appearance. And this will go to it. Sky rings, one important thing about sky rings to remember, north, south, east, west, is that there are hills, forests. You know, when you're trying to get that sense of depth and distance, there's something beyond your area and an external area? You use the sky rings to the north, could be a city, to the south of your area, could be a forest. Those are the things that you can drop down and set in areas. Not that you need to know this, I just want to show you some of the capabilities of the system. Mountains, islands, forests, cities, etc. So we won't use any of those on an interior. Day and night cycles. Tim, to your question, see the extent to which you can impact that. And it's the same thing here. Sky rings at night can be different than sky rings during the day. So does it seem incredibly complex? But don't let it overwhelm you, because if you think about it, what you want to ask myself, where am I? What do I want that where to look like? North, south, east, and west. And then what do I want populated in the areas? It's each element has a set of properties with it. A couple other things here quickly, and Chris is going to watch my time for me.
2 minutes.
2 minutes, so we're about out of time. Each area has a load screen that is attached to it, so that you can explicitly assign You see that interior 10? That's the load screen I chose for Edmund Spencer's, for our conference room. And that's the screen as you are loading and transiting to a new area that they'll see. I think that has a very powerful psychological impact on how people perceive the narrative context in which you're playing. So be attentive to little details like this. So why I started this at an abstract level, because I tell you where the details are, it can become quite problematic. So I think we are largely about out of time, guys. We'll continue this on